This is Digital Story Podcast number 630, April 17th, 2018. Today's theme is, are there any benefits to watermarking? I'm Derek Story. A bad watermark is like the pimple on a nose of a beautiful person. You want to enjoy the beauty, but all you can see is the pimple. Now, not all watermarks are bad. In fact, they can be both tasteful and useful. And the quest to figure all of that out is the subject of today's TVS podcast. So I look at a lot of photos every day, 7 days a week. Part of my job here at the Digital Story and part of the work that I do for Skylum also. So looking at all these photos, there are certainly a number of watermarks that I see every day. Some of them better than others. And it got me thinking, first of all, why would we watermark our images? Things have changed over the last couple decades when it comes to all that sort of stuff. And then if we do want a watermark, how do we do it so that it doesn't impede the enjoyment of the photograph itself? And I thought, well, you know what? This is worth talking a little bit about. We haven't chatted about this, I don't believe. Or if we have, it was so long ago that I don't remember. So first of all, watermark pros. Yeah, there are a couple of them. You know, they're a simple way to identify the creator of the image, and they can be used for branding opportunities too. So for example, if you're a portrait photographer, if you're a wedding photographer, and people are sharing your images, or you give images for people to share, you share them yourself, and you put a watermark on there that indicates, you know, who you are or the name of your business, and people like the shot, that actually could lead to business. In that case, it's a pretty good thing. Now, you know, they're also good for things that have nothing to do with branding or identification, but for example, using a watermark for position only, if you're in the publication business. And you want to make sure that an image doesn't get published, but you know, you just want to convey an idea. You grab an image from somewhere and you put FPO as a big watermark over the face of it, then you know, that's a very useful thing. And then also going back to wedding and portrait photographers, a lot of times they'll use a watermark with the word proof on it so that people know they're just looking at a proof of an image. It's not the final shot. It's just something that they can use to help them, you know, get a feel for the shoot and maybe pick their favorites. So, you know, this technique, this physical technique, does have a lot of different uses. Most of the applications that we use today, Lightroom, Photoshop, Capture One Pro 11, Luminar, allow us to create watermarks and to include them in the images. So they can be incorporated into our workflow fairly easily. So that whole side of watermarking actually makes a lot of sense. Then we start getting into the use and abuse of them. And I have, you know, five things to keep in mind if you have a need for a watermark. And you know, this is the thing, a lot of times we only use them every now and then or in a specific situation. It's not something we do with every photo, at least most of us don't do it with every photo. So here are five things to consider for those times that you think a watermark is appropriate or useful. First thing, consider why you're watermarking in the first place. Is it to prevent theft? Well, if it is, you could be wasting your time, in all honesty, because, you know, just regular watermarking, no guarantee that your image won't be stolen. The watermark can be cropped out, can be erased, it can, all sorts of things can happen to just a standard watermark. So it's really not going to prevent theft. And if that's what you think you're doing when you put a big old watermark on your image, then the reality of the situation, I think, is much different than that. You know, services like Pixie, for example, do a better job of tracking your images and, you know, letting you know if something has been used outside of the copyright notice that you put on the shot, or if someone's, you know, pirated your image and using it for commercial purposes, things like that. So there are services that are much more effective. And I mentioned Pixie earlier, and I've actually used Pixie in the past, and I thought it was pretty good, P-I-X-S-Y. And you can set up a free account with them, and that allows you to track a certain number of images. And then if you want more than that, you know, obviously they will take some of your money and, you know, allow you to add more images to the tracking service. So I think that's far more effective than watermarking. And another thing to keep in mind is that make sure that you have all of your copyright information in the metadata. So how to get a hold of you, all rights reserved, copyright 2018, you know, all that kind of stuff should be in the metadata. Does that prevent theft? Well, not intentional theft, but a lot of times theft happens accidentally. Someone, you know, just grabs a photo and, for instance, they might use it for position only, and then the next thing you know that the thing gets published, and then they notice, oh, that happened. And then they want to get a hold of you, right? Honest people, they want to get a hold of you to, you know, try to straighten this out or let you know what happened or whatever. They can't get a hold of you if your information isn't in the metadata. So make sure that you have that information in there too for those times when something happens to your image by an honest person or accidentally, or, you know, someone else wants to correct an error that was made. Those are far more effective than a watermark. Now, second thing, if you're using your signature as a watermark, and some photographers like to do this, and I totally understand why, because it's kind of neat. Like, when I first started printing, I always signed the images. I signed them in pencil. I basically did what I had seen photographers do in the museum. And I, you know, so I mirrored that in my own work. Now, of course, my work, especially then, was not worthy of signature, at least in my view. But I did it anyway, and much in the way that, you know, kids emulate things that their parents do, you know, a lot of times we as artists, especially early in our career, will mimic things that great artists do. And I think that's very natural, and that's very part of the process. So now we publish or share our images digitally more than printing. That's the way it is. And so the idea of having your signature as a watermark, that is not a substitute for what we used to do in pencil, but kind of along the same lines, is sort of saying, you know, I'm very proud of this picture and, you know, I've signed this image. Well, that's kind of cool. I think that is kind of cool. But there's a couple things about that. A lot of people's signatures aren't very legible. So if it's just a scribble, unless you become a very famous photographer, it's not really going to do you a lot of good. And in fact, it could become a distraction. So if you do have a signature as your watermark, then I would say make sure that it's legible so people can actually read it and know who you are. Now, when you're using watermarks for brand building, make sure that you don't clutter up the composition or detract from the image. And the reason why I say that with brand building is because a lot of times they involve a logo. And so the logo can have its own distinct look. And then in order to really see the logo, sometimes the whole watermark has to be bigger. And the next thing you know, you've got this thing dominating eighth of the real estate of the overall composition. Now, you can make the same mistake with signature watermarks as well. And I do see signature watermarks that are way too big and positioned, you know, way too prominently in the composition. So you want to stay away from that. If you're using these things for brand building, yes, you know, they need to be legible, just like with the signature, but don't make them too big and don't put them in a vital position in the image. People will find the watermarks. Believe me, they'll see them, but you don't want to detract from the enjoyment of the picture itself. Otherwise, in a way, you're just advertising how you've annoyed somebody instead of attracting business and new clients. A lot of photographers I see, especially ones that I see on a regular basis in groups that I moderate, will always put the watermark, and this is more true if it's their signature, will always put the watermark in the same place. And my assumption is that this happens because something of a template they have in Lightroom or something like that, where it's part of the workflow. They have a template set up and the watermark always goes exactly here at this X and Y axis, regardless of the image itself. I would argue against that. I know it's convenient, but I really think that if you're going to add a watermark to a picture, that you need to look at the picture and find an area that you can put that watermark to where, yes, it's legible. We want that, of course, but where it is not distracting. So creating a template where it always goes in the same place is going to work for some shots and not for others. And when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. And I've seen the watermark go across a very important part of the image, and I'm trying to enjoy this image, and I've got this thing right there, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating because without it there, without it interfering, I probably would really like the picture. What happens is I move on. I just move on at that point and really don't give the image any more time. Now, I talked about earlier that most of our applications that we use, especially ones that are more geared toward enthusiasts or professionals, they have a way to incorporate watermarks in the workflow. The thing that I really like, though, is when the watermark is on a separate layer or is controllable. And when I say controllable, really what I'm thinking about, other than position, is, of course, opacity. And having a watermark at 50% opacity is much different than having one at 100% opacity. And especially if you have a strong watermark in terms of a graphical logo or something like that, being able to tone that down through the use of opacity control can really make the watermark much more palatable, and yet it's just as legible if it were at 100%, okay? So, you know, opacity control, I think, is just vital. And, you know, one of the things that I do, and I published a tutorial on the digital story this weekend on how to add a watermark in Luminar. Again, it was on a separate layer. It was a graphical watermark. It was the Nimble Photographer. So not only did I use opacity to help get the watermark exactly the way that I wanted, but you also have blending modes when it's on a separate layer. And a lot of times, one blending mode will look a lot better than another blending mode. And when I use a PNG file, for my watermark that has, let's say it's the Walking Man, the Nimble Photographer, on a white background, well, certain blending modes will get rid of that white background altogether. So all you see is the Walking Man on, you know, hopefully a neutral area where he's not distracting too much from the image. Blending modes really make a big difference. If I didn't use a blending mode for that watermark, then I would have a white rectangle at 100% possibly down there in the corner. And if the image is mainly neutral tones and so forth, that white rectangle is really going to jump out. And again, it's going to pull the eye away from the composition and it's going to become a distraction. So blending modes and opacity, those help a lot with the control and the final look and feel of the watermark. And that's why I like to apply them in applications that allow me to have those controls, and that usually involves putting them on a separate layer. Now, the other advantage to having it on a separate layer is, of course, that you can turn it off and on just by turning off and on that layer. So let's say that 90% of the time when you output that image, when you export it to whatever, 2048 on the long edge for publishing on Facebook, for example, most of the time, let's say you don't want the watermark. Well, then, you know, the layer's off and you just get the image. And then there's that instance, maybe when you're sending it to a client or something like that, that you want the watermark turned on. All you have to do is turn on that layer, export again, and the watermark's there. So that's another huge advantage to having your watermark on a separate layer. So those are five things that I think we all should keep in mind when we're using them. Again, if you're putting a watermark on there to protect your image from theft, I gotta be honest with you, I just don't think it's going to help toward that cause at all, and maybe you just want to leave it off. And then ask other people. Go, hey, this is how I'm using my watermark right now. There are reasons why I want it sometimes, so what do you think of how I'm using it? What do you think of its position, its size, its opacity? Get some feedback from other folks. Most of the time, they'll tell you the truth on this. You know, they don't even have to be photographers. They can be anyone, you know, who just looks at this thing and go, hey, that's very nice. Well done. It doesn't distract. Or they go, ooh, boy, that's really pulling my eye away from the shot. Is there a different way that you can do that? Get some feedback. Kind of figure out an artful way to use them when you need them. And then I think you'll have much better success in terms of branding and identification, and maybe just adding a little personal touch to your images. RAW Power 1.1 features lots of improvements. This is a cool little app for iOS, RAW Power, and it's written by gentlemen coders, and they are terrific. And one of the things that I like about gentlemen coders is they really understand how raw decoding works on a Mac. They really understand how it worked so well in Aperture, and they have brought a lot of that knowledge to RAW Power, not only as the editing extension for photos for Mac OS, but also to mobile devices via RAW Power, now 1.1. And I'll tell you, the first version of RAW Power did a great job of decoding RAW files on a mobile device. I mean, that it has always done really well. What I like about this new version, 1.1, that's available now, is that it's more refined. And the look and feel of the user interface is really improved. I was using it on an iPhone 10 when I was thinking about what I was going to say about this app in the podcast. I also use it on an iPad, but I have to tell you, most of the time, I'm opening it up on my iPhone 10 because I have the iPhone 10 with me all the time, and RAW Power is great. And along those lines, I should mention that not only is RAW Power good for editing and decoding RAW files, but it works great on JPEGs as well. So even if you never have a RAW file on your mobile device, I would still take a look at this app because it does a wonderful job with JPEGs. So anyway, so what is new in this 1.1 version? Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and I want to tease it a little bit with you because, again, if you're a mobile photographer, or if you're someone that sends RAW files over from your camera to your mobile device, I think this is something that you ought to investigate if you haven't yet. So the first thing they did was incorporate a new RAW Images Smart Album. And what it does is it just automatically filters the album and shows you all the RAWs. It just takes care of that for you. So there it is. You want to work on a RAW file, go to the RAW Images Smart Album that the application automatically creates. Very, very handy. You can export these images that you decode with RAW Power and edit, right, using cool features like Boost, stuff that you just don't get on other apps. But then you can export them as TIFFs, both 8-bit and 16-bit TIFFs, JPEGs, and PNGs. And I love that ability to, you know, open up a RAW file on your mobile device, edit it with this very powerful decoder, and then export it in the file format that you want. Yes, you can do that. So you can export it to photos, or you can export it to a number of different places. And the application is very good with giving you all these different sharing opportunities, such as your Dropbox account. You have DPI and compression preferences in this little iOS app The layout and user interface has larger controls. It's much easier to use. You know, sometimes I think in the early stages of an app, they're really focusing on functionality, making sure that that works, which I totally understand that. And then later on, especially the good software, they'll really start to refine the user interface. And, you know, that's what's happening with this app. The UI is far superior to the first version. I really like it. It's, again, very enjoyable on a mobile device. They added 3D touch control for 1UP images. And, of course, if you have an iPhone, I believe 6S or newer, you can use 3D touch. They have a full-size curves adjustment in vertical screen mode. Now, the way I believe that raw power works, and it's been a while since I got it set up, but I believe you can download the app for free, and it has all the controls except for like three of them, curves, white balance, and I think there's another one too, where then you purchase the pro version for $4.99, I believe. And those are unlocked. And so I highly recommend doing that because then you have access to everything that the app can do. And it still only costs you $4.99. By the way, that's just one time $4.99, not $4.99 a month. And, you know, curves is one of those adjustments and is very handy to have. They have controls now for things like showing and hiding thumbnails in edit mode. They've made it really easy to show the revert image and to show the original or not. They actually created a little button for that so that you can totally enjoy the original and study it, and then hit the button again and totally enjoy and study the edited version without having to have your finger on the screen. I think that's really nice. And then they have this very clever thing called auto histogram. That when you go into auto histogram mode, it's one of the options that you have for the histogram, that it shows and hides itself automatically when you're using certain adjustments, and then it turns off. It hides itself afterwards so that it's not cluttering up the screen because, you know, let's face it, we don't have a ton of real estate, screen real estate, when we're working on these mobile devices. So the auto histogram is really a great way where you get to use the histogram, but you're not constantly hiding it or turning it on and off or doing all that stuff. It does it intelligently. Really, really nice. So, and there's more. There's a lot more. The whole organizing ability of this application in order to just, you know, keep track of your library and organize it and all that. And remember, when you edit an image using raw power, then it is automatically saved to all of your devices, both your desktop Macs and your other iOS devices, because, you know, those edits, those images are connected via iCloud. So very handy. So you can literally do raw editing on your mobile device and then have it show up everywhere else. This is really a good app, and I've spoke very highly of Raw Power in the past as an editing extension as well. I think it's a fantastic editing extension if you're using photos. I featured it in my latest book, the second edition of, you know, the Apple Photos book for photographers. It is good stuff, and if you're a mobile photographer, I would definitely take a look at it. I want to talk a little bit about the aerial photography workshop that we have coming up June 8th through 10th here in Sonoma County. And this is really a neat event. I haven't talked much about it lately because there's been so much going on. And we still have a couple open seats for it. The way that I want to put it is that this workshop is going to be really fun. If you want to just have fun, if you want to come and hang out with other photographers, do fun activities, and really enjoy yourself, really get away from, you know, the day-to-day life that a lot of times gets in the way of our photography, you really ought to consider this workshop. And so what do I mean by fun? What kind of fun things am I talking about? Fun things such as going to a hot air balloon festival and being there where you actually have access to the balloons. You're not cordoned off half a mile away. You are right there where they are working on the balloons, where they are preparing them for liftoff. You are there, you have access to that, and you can photograph that right there. You can be right in the mix. It is so much fun to do it that way, so much more exciting. The images have a much wider variety. You're not just stuck with long shots. You can get tight shots of people doing stuff, and then you can step back and get them up in the air. Obviously, we're going to go to the pre-dawn glow. You know, that is just a blast and always very impressive images. So the whole balloon festival, hot air balloon festival, is fun. It's absolutely fun, and it's easy. It's very easy. What else is fun? How about being able to fly a drone without worrying about getting arrested or harassed? That's what we're going to do. We have spots where we're going to go out. We're going to talk about drone photography. They're very beautiful. But you'll be able to just get out there and enjoy learning to fly a drone or practicing to fly a drone or just fly a drone for once without having to worry about a bunch of stuff. We can do that here in Sonoma County. There are great places to do that. That is part of the workshop. Learning how to get the most out of the images that you do capture with an aerial device. So how do you post-process them? How do you really make them look fantastic? How do you use techniques, you know, such as, you know, movie recording techniques or panorama stitching techniques with these devices to make them even more expressive in terms of the type of content you can create? We're going to do that, and that is fun. How about riding a train from basically where we are at the studio, TDS headquarters, down to this really great area in Petaluma, California, that has one of the most wonderful areas for street photography, and being able to have lunch there, do a little street photography. I know a train isn't an aerial device, but I'm including it in this workshop because it's fun and because it is a different way of moving around for most of us. I'm going to try to arrange it so we go out to the airport and watch Touch and Goes and have lunch there. You know, all this stuff is a blast in addition to hanging out with one another, to learning new things, just having a good time. Now, if this is something that sounds fun to you, something that could help, you know, recharge your creative battery a bit, here's what you do. I'm going to put a link in the show notes here to this podcast directly to the schedule and itinerary for the Sonoma County Hot Air Balloon and Drone Photography Workshop. All you have to do is click on that link and you'll be able to see, you know, everything that's going on there. It's a preliminary itinerary. I'm still refining it, but you'll get a pretty good idea. And then if you like what you see, you can register right there and reserve your spot. It's June 8th through 10th, right here in Sonoma County. And then you may want to add on to your trip, and that's what a lot of folks are doing. I was actually consulting with one of our signed up participants today on things to do not only in San Francisco, where he's flying in, but then also the extra day that he's going to spend up here in Sonoma County and really make a nice getaway. It can also help you with things like transportation, all that good stuff. Really create a wonderful getaway for yourself. Have this workshop at the heart of it. You'll go home with a lot of pictures. You'll have learned new things, and your creative battery should be full. So give it a look and think about it. And I'd love to see you here in June and, you know, do some of this stuff with us. We're going to have a blast. I want to give a shout out to the folks who have sent me some very fine 35 millimeter cameras. So when I first started talking about this, was it about a month ago? That if you had a 35 millimeter camera, analog camera that uses film, that you weren't using, and you wanted to find a good home for it, you wanted to know that someone was using it and enjoying it, and at the same time, helping out our virtual camera club here, because, I mean, this is a way to show support. You know, maybe you don't want to do some of the other methods, but you can do this. It is right up there with just about any other way that you can help the cause here. And I have received some wonderful cameras, and it's been so much fun because I've had correspondence, you know, with the Virtual Camera Club member, one of our fellow photographers, about the camera. Sometimes they give me a little bit of history about it. And then, you know, I receive it and I open it up and I look at it and I go, you know, I feel like I know this person now a little bit from the correspondence, and I'm looking at the camera that they used for years. It's just really, really fun, and I've really enjoyed it. So thank you to those of you who have contributed. If you want to do this, if you have a 35 millimeter camera that you want to get in the hands of someone that's going to love it and enjoy it, then all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, use the contact form, and just say on that contact form that you have a camera that you would like to contribute to the cause, and we'll take it from there. And a big shout out to those that have done that. Receiving your cameras has really brought a smile to my face, I tell you. They are some really nice stuff, some really fun gear here. I want to let folks know that we're on the reserve list for the Bernie Falls and Lassen Volcanic National Park Workshop. The invites have gone out. So if you are on the reserve list, if you signed up on the reserve list, you should have an invite in your inbox. We've already had a number of signups. And if you want to come, I wouldn't wait too awfully long, because we're going at a pretty good clip right now. I knew this one was going to be popular just because it's got a certain exotic factor to it. It should be there in your inbox, and I just wanted to give you a heads up in case you hadn't seen it yet. I'd like to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members, our Patreon members. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the project that's going to be showing up for our Inner Circle members at the first of the month. And by the way, we've added a few lately, so hello and welcome. Welcome to the club. It involves printing, and it also involves analog. And so the film for this project that I'm working on, that I'm going to share with you, which I think is a pretty neat project, got sent off to the lab. And I'm waiting. It's going to come back at the end of this week. And at that point, then I'm going to be able to incorporate those images into the video footage that I recorded while I was in Hawaii. And I should be able, pretty quickly to finish off that video for you and have it ready at the first of the month. So that project's coming along really nicely. And I'm really looking forward to sharing it with all of our Patreon members. Thank you so much, Inner Circle members, for supporting this show. And if you're interested in becoming a part of that, all you have to do is go to any page of the Digital Story, click on the Patreon tile, and you can sign up right there. Inner Circle member is $5 a month, and we put that to good use. I just sent a big PayPal payment today, as a matter of fact, to our administrator, who helped us with a number of things over the last 2 months. Been a rough month tech-wise. You know, he needs to be paid, just like the ISP and everyone else. And thanks to you, I have the money in the account to do that. And finally, a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, who are also part of this project. They don't know it yet. They don't know any more about it than the rest of you. But I'm using some of their wonderful materials and some of the inspiration I've got from them, you know, in terms of printing for this project. And they are there every month for us, month in and month out. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take you to our landing page there. And they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Printing is exciting, I have to tell you, and it's fun. And a lot of times, you know, the ability to print and the knowledge that you can do this will create a project that you might not have thought of otherwise. You know, we get inspiration from all different places for our creative work. And I'll tell you, the association I've had with Red River Paper and the excitement I've had about printing over the years has been the genesis for a number of really good projects that I feel great about. And you can enjoy that too. You can add that dimension to your work Red River paper, as I said, a tile on all the pages of the digital story. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some good stuff for next week. I have a goodie coming that I'm not going to talk about yet, but I'm going to be able to review that I think you're going to be very interested in it, especially if you're a mirrorless photographer. That's in the works right now. I have a number of other things in the works. Come back and join me next Tuesday. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.